This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Material. What was so terrible about the attitude of Korach? What was wrong? A man of his stature, and he was a great man before this time, would not have been jealous of the status that was accorded to Moshe and Aaron. That isn't what he would have been jealous about. Firstly, he had a great deal of status himself, and secondly, he was an Olam Gadol. He was far above the petty jealousies which one might attribute to ordinary people. And furthermore, we find already beforehand that such jealousies, if one can call them that, are acceptable in the Torah. Rashi brings a medrash at the beginning of Baal Yisrael. Lama nismecho parashos ha-menoiro le-parashos ha-nesim. Why is the parasha of the menoiro put next to the parasha of the nesim, of the heads of tribes? Answers Rashi, lefi shekeshero Aaron Chanukas ha-nesim. For when Aaron beheld the dedication of the Mishkan, which took place by the Nesim, each bringing a korban of their own, Hosho Oz Batoi, his mind became weak, he nearly fainted. When he realized that he was not participating with him in the dedication of the Mishkan.
Neither himself nor any of the Kohanim, not his whole shevet. Omar LeHakadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, Chayecho Shelcho Gedolo Mishelohem. By your life, yours will be greater than them. Sha'atel Madli V'Meitiv V'Saneirus. For you are going to prepare and light the candles. So we see God takes it very nicely that Aaron feels outdone, he feels it's unfair. Why is it that neither he nor any member of his tribe is given the opportunity to bring the korbanos and the chanukas hamishkan? The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't say, Aaron, how can you be jealous of such a thing? It's for me to decide who does what. Well, what are you performing about? Not at all. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, relax, calm down. You'll be looked after too. You've also got a wonderful job to do. What was really worse about Korach's emotion of feeling that he should have had a position of responsibility, any more so than Aaron's feeling there? And we have other cases of that in Tanakh where there is that feeling and it's accepted. The second question that we need to deal with is of a more technical nature. The 250 people, all colleagues of Korach, all take their machtos, they take their pans into the Mishkan and they bring the ketores, they bring the incense offering, and they are destroyed by it. For we know that any zar, any stranger, anybody unqualified who brings the ketores into the Kodshei Kedoshim doesn't survive. And so none of these 250 people survived. After their death, we're told that the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe, Emor el Elozor ben Aaron HaKohen, say to Elozor, the son of Aaron the Kohen, Ve'yorem es hamachtos mibein hasreifo, let him lift up the pan, the copper pans, from among the burnt out leftovers, Ve'esoesh zerei holo, and the fire push on, Ki kodeshu, for those pans are holy. The pans of these sinners who sinned with their lives, the osu oisom rikue pachim tzipui la mizbeach, and beat them out as a covering, as a coating for the mizbeach, ki hikrivum lifnei Hashem, for they have been brought before Hashem, vayikdoshu, and they have become holy. The yiyu lois lifnei Yisrael, and let them be a sign for Bnei Yisrael. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you can't just throw out the pants. They've become holy. There's Kedusha attached to them. The only thing you can do with them is use them in the Mishkan itself by covering the Mizbeach with this copper coating, which will be made out of beating these pans into a thin plate, which can then be put over the Mizbeach. All the Mefoshim are disturbed about this. What does it mean they've become holy? How did they become holy? 250 people who had no business being there brought a korban, which wasn't even a korban, it was destroyed, and so were they. At what point do these become Kodesh? There are two ways that a Kli can become Kodesh, that a Kli can become sanctified. The one is the original Kelim that were made by Moshe were sanctified by Meshichel, they were anointed. Thereafter, a Kli became sanctified whenever it was used in the service of the Beis HaMikdash or in the service of the Mishkan. So these Kelim, they were neither anointed nor were they really used in the service of the Mishkan. This wasn't part of the valid service of the Mishkan. Says Rashi, Ki Kodeshu, for they have become holy. Va'asurim bahano, and they may not be used for anything else. We can neither destroy them nor can we utilize them. Shaharei aso'um kli shoris, because they were made as kelim to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Aso'um kli shoris, they've been made for vessels of service. And that still remains very different, difficult. And the Ramban asks, the lo yodati tam li'isur hazeh. I don't understand, says the Ramban. Why the fact that they were made and used in the way that they were used, why that should make them forbidden for Hano, that one can't have any benefit out of them, one can't destroy them, one can't use them. Sharek Torez Zoro Hikriv. This was a strange incense offering that they brought. It wasn't part of the temple service. The Zor she also Kli Shores Lahaktu Bachutz. And if an ordinary person is not a Kohen Gadol, will make his own incense offering and just bring it. Beisur, against the din. Eino Mekudosh, that doesn't make his kelim, that doesn't make the utensils holy. So what is it that's happened here? These are people who are unqualified to be doing what they did. What they did was not part of the temple service. How can you say that by this performing this strange k'teres, the kelim became kodesh, the kelim, the utensils became sanctified? Aval Yesh Lo'emar, onto the Ramban. Ki ba'avur she'osu kein al pi Moshe. Since they did this by the mouth of Moshe, it was by his instruction, hoyu kodesh, that's what made them holy. Ki heim, so firstly says the Ramban, it wasn't just sort of a voluntary act, they just brought a k'teres because they felt like it. This was an instruction of Moshe, so it had authority to it. And furthermore, there was kavana, there was intent. Ki heim higdishu esam l'shamayim, they dedicated these kelim to shamayim, to Hashem, l'fi shechoshvu shiyane esam ha'elikim bo'ish, for they expected God to answer them positively, v'tiyyena ha'machto yisraeli ki shoris b'oil mo'id le'ilam. And then these kelim would be used in the Mishkan forever after. So their intention at the time of bringing it was not just to bring a false sacrifice, an odd thing which once it would be done would be over. Their intention was to use the machlis now, and this would prove that in fact they were right. Don't forget, these are 250 of the most outstanding Talmidei Chachomim of Klal Yisrael. They thought this through very thoroughly before they did it, and they would never have done it and certainly never have risked their lives if they weren't absolutely satisfied that they and Korach were right and that this was going to succeed. And so they take their machlis with the full intention of success. What will happen if they will succeed? God will answer them and they will become Kohanim. And if they become Kohanim, Kohanim Gedolim, never mind Kohanim, they will be able to use these pans in the future to bring other Ketores. So their intention, firstly they were instructed by Moshe, so it wasn't voluntary, it wasn't of their own volition, it was a mitzvah in their minds. And secondly, their intention, their kavona, was not to use the machtos on the odd occasion of this strange korban. They didn't regard this as a strange korban. They regarded this as the test of their qualification, which when passed, as they surely expected to pass it, they would then use these machtos forever after. And so there is an eternal kedusha attached to these machtos. That's how the Ramban answers it. How he explains Rashi. On this, the Chassam Sofer asks two kashas, he asks two questions. Strangely enough, the Chassam Sofer is in the Tshuvas and on the Chaim Siman Lamed Zayin. The first question he asks is on the Chumash. It says, V'yiyu l'ois livnei Yisrael. God says, I want this as a covering on the Mizbeach so that it should be a sign for Bnei Yisrael. Obviously, the people will always remember what happened to Korach and his community. Asks the Chassam Sofer, but what is it going to help? in years to come, somebody will see the sign and think, oh yes, that wicked Korach. Remember what happened to him? He got burnt. He got destroyed. He was swallowed in the ground and his 250 men were all burnt up. Why? Because they tried to take the kahuna, they tried to take office which was not given to them, and obviously they weren't fitted, they weren't suited for it. But I, who am much greater than Korach, surely I can do it. In other words, ask the Chassam Sofer, how does the machtos, how does this copper plating remind people to keep away from the essential problem of this machlekes? The essential thing is not whether Korach was fit or he wasn't fit. The essential thing was that they were arguing on the authority of Moshe and Aaron. But you can't see that from the remembering of the copper plates. You can't see that. Remember, they were destroyed. That could be for one of two reasons. It might be because they had no right to question Moshe and Aaron, but it also might be because they were Zorim, because they weren't entitled to do what they did, that greater people maybe would have been accepted. How do we know from that that God's rejection of them was irrespective of whom they were? In essence, the whole machlokes was wrong and incorrect. That's the first question of that. Second question he asks on the Ramban. The Ramban says they expected the God to answer them positively. That would have meant that their korban would have been valid. Had their korban would have been valid, they would have become the kohanim, and for future generations they and their descendants would have brought korbanos ktoires in these pans. So their intention was to dedicate the pans for kedusha for always. Ask the Chassam Sofer, but that dedication was conditional. If I, for example, take money and I say, this money I'm giving to the Beis Hamikdash on condition that whatever it is, such and such a kohen will come and visit me tomorrow. If he comes and visits me tomorrow, the money belongs to the Beis Hamikdash. If he doesn't come and visit me tomorrow, the money doesn't belong to the Beis Hamikdash. What will happen if the kohen doesn't come? The money doesn't belong to the Beis Hamikdash. The condition was not fulfilled. It's a conditional hekdash. This too, says the Chassam Sofer, was a conditional dedication. They said, if God will answer us positively, which we expect, then these machtos, these pans, are going to be sanctified forever, for we will use them. But they must have known in their own minds, in the unlikely event that God will not accept their sacrifices, there will be no kedusha attached to these machtos at all. They'll all be killed. So it was a kedusha al tznai. It was a conditional dedication. And the condition wasn't fulfilled. Ask the Chassam Sofer, the Ramban's kasha then returns. If that's the case, it's all very well that their intention was to dedicate it forever, but that was only provided God would accept their korban. If God doesn't accept their korban, there was no intention to dedicate it forever. Then God didn't accept their korban, and therefore it shouldn't have been dedicated. Answers the Chassam Sofer, the reason that the kedusha stuck with the pants was because they were matne al mashe kosuv b'Torah. That means they made a condition against the provisions of the Torah. I can give money to the Beis Hamikdash on condition a kohen comes to visit me tomorrow. That I can do. But what will happen if I give money to the Beis Hamikdash on condition the kohen eats treif? Eats treif, it belongs to the Beis Hamikdash. He won't eat treif, it doesn't belong to the Beis Hamikdash. What then is the deal? That's called matne al mashik kosuv b'Torah, making a condition against the Torah. And tanoi botel, we cancel the condition, but the main provision stands. In other words, the money belongs to the Beis Hamikdash. We strike out the condition. It's considered an invalid condition, and we regard the act as unconditional. Says the Chassam Sofer, the only way the kedusha could remain attached to these vessels is because the condition, it's true the condition wasn't fulfilled. So we must say the condition was invalid. It was an inadmissible condition to start with, because it was matna al-mashe kosuv b'Torah. What did they say? If God will accept my sacrifice, if God will accept my sacrifice, that means He's rejected Aaron. We already have in the Torah that God has appointed Aaron. So there's no way God can accept their sacrifice. And therefore we regard their condition as null and void, and their dedication was absolute. They gave this, they made this vessel dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash, conditional to God accepting. That conditional can't be, so they dedicated the kohen to the Beis Hamikdash unconditionally. And says the Chassam Sofer, that's why it's such a reminder for people in generations to come. When people see it on the Mizbeach, they will ask, and why did this land up on the Mizbeach? Why didn't they just destroy the memory of these wicked men? And they will answer, because the Torah says, Ki Kodeshu, because the utensils became holy. And they will ask, why did the utensils become holy? God didn't accept their korban, so the condition wasn't accepted. And they will answer, but it was a matna amasha kosov batoiro. Their whole condition was invalid, and that's the most important thing to remember. In fact, that's all we need to remember. That the tnai was bottle, their condition was invalid. What was their condition? That God will accept my korban. That implies the deposition of Aaron. And that's against the Torah. That cannot be. We cannot depose Aaron. And that's what needs to be remembered, that irrespective of who you are, Korach, and irrespective of how great you are, all 250 of you, to depose Aaron would be against the provisions of the Torah itself. That cannot be done. And once that cannot be done, the condition you're imposing is a matna amashikos of batorah. It's a condition which cannot be fulfilled. And therefore the tnai is bottled, the tnai is completely cancelled out. And that's why the kedusha remained. So the ois, the sign of this copper being used on the Mizbeach, it's beautiful the way it comes out according to the Chassam Sofer, is a reminder of the essential principle of the whole machlokes. I want to repeat that very briefly, because it's difficult and I don't think that many of you have grasped it. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, take the copper pans, and we would expect him to say destroy them, but he doesn't. He says use them for a covering on the Mizbeach, ki kodeshu, for they have been sanctified. And we said there are two ways of sanctifying a kli. The early kelim was sanctified by anointment, which doesn't apply here. Later kelim was sanctified by usage in the Mishkan. When a kli is used, it becomes kodesh. Once it's kodesh, it can't be used for anything chulin. It cannot be used for anything secular any longer. It can only be used in the Beis Hamikdash itself. And therefore we must say, as Rashi says, why, how did these kelim become kodesh? Says Rashi, shaharei asolum kli shores. They made them utensils of service. And by making them utensils of service and using them, they became kodesh. You can't now do anything with them. You can't throw them out. You can't destroy them. Nor can you use them for secular use. Asks the Ramban, but I don't understand how that can be. After all, these were Zorim, these were strangers being, it wasn't an Avodah. What kind of Avodah was this? They weren't a Kohen Gadol, they weren't Kohenim Gedolim, and the Ketores was no Ketores, the Korban was no Korban, they were no Makrivim, there was nothing. How can that have the effect of making them, of making those Kelim Kodesh? Answers the Ramban, that since they were instructed to do so by Moshe, on the one hand, this wasn't their own idea, this was had the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu, and secondly, their intention was that the Ribbono Shel Olam would answer their korban. They did not expect rejection, they expected acceptance. And since they expected acceptance, the intention would have been that these kelim would have continued to be used in the Mishkan forever after. And so their intention at that time was that since God is going to accept our korbanos, these kelim are going to become kodesh. As it happens, God didn't accept their korbanos, but the kelim remained kodesh. That's how the Ramban learns. Ask the Chassam Sofer, but one second, this is a matna amash, this is a kedusha b'tanai. They said these kelim will become kodesh if God accepts our korban. But if God doesn't accept our korban, it will retrospectively show that our claims are false, and we are not kohanim gedolim, and we have no right to do it, and our korban was no korban. And therefore the kedusha should disappear. Answers the Ramban. Answers the Chassam Sofer. No, this was a matna amasha kosov batoira. That tnai is an invalid condition. They had no right to make such a condition. Their condition was, if God will accept the korban, then this kelim will become kodesh. God cannot accept that korban. The tnai can't work because it's a matna amasha kosov batoira. It would imply, or it would entail the deposition of Aaron. And Aaron has already been appointed in the Torah. Once Aaron has been appointed in the Torah, we can't push him aside. He's there to stay. And therefore, it's a matna amasha kosov batoira. And tznoi botel v'maisekayim, the tznai is struck out, the condition is struck out, but the action remains valid. What was the action? We're dedicating these kelim to the Beis Hamikdash on condition that God will accept my korban. That we strike out. There's no condition. It's dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash. Once that is the case, the only thing they can be used for afterwards is as a covering for the Mizbeach. It can't be used for anything secular again. And with that, the Chassam Sofer explains how future generations will be able to learn the essence of the limud of this whole thing. What was he worried about? The Chassam Sefer said future people might say the reason this rebellion failed is because Korach wasn't strong enough, wasn't great enough. But if somebody greater than Korach will arise, maybe he would be entitled, or would have in that event been successful. Says the Ramban, no. What they will learn from here is that these machtos, these kelim, these vessels became kiddush despite the condition. Why? Because the condition was invalid. It was a matna amashikosu batoiro. That will teach future generations that any attempt to depose the existing Kohen Gadol, unless he proves himself unfit, any attempt to depose the Kohen Gadol is invalid and unacceptable, no matter how great you are. Korach could have been greater than Aaron. It doesn't make any difference. Once Aaron has been appointed, Aaron is there to stay, and that's the end of the story. And that's the limud of this parasha, says the Chassam Sofer. That's the limud. That's what we have to learn after seeing the sign of the kedusha of the copper plates, that they had to be retained, they couldn't be destroyed, and they couldn't be used for anything else. Once we understand that, we begin to understand several medrashim which Rashi brings. The one medrash, Omar Elohim, Moshe says to Korach and his friends, "Bedarchei hagoyim, in the ways of the non-Jews, yesh nimusim harbe, there are many different practices, v'chimrin harbe, and many different priests. Kulom miskabtsim bevasachas, they all gather together at one time and do their different things. Each priest does his own avodah. But we, ein lonu elo Hashem echod, we have one God. The Torah achas, and we have one Torah. No New Testament and Old Testament, is one Torah. Mishpat echod, and one system of law. Mizbeach echod, and one altar. We can't go and build mizbeaches all over the place. One mizbeach. The Kohen Gadol Echod and one Kohen Gadol. The Atem Mosayim V'Chamishim Mishim, you 250 men, Mavakshim Kuvuna Gedolah, you want to all be Kohen Gadols? I would also want to become a Kohen Gadol, says Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe introduces them to one principle here, that there can only be one Kohen Gadol, which seems to be one of the issues in conflict at the moment in this parsha. Why is that so? Why should there only be one Kohen Gadol? Let's have several. If there are more people fit for it, why should only one be appointed? Moshe Rabbeinu says, cannot be. We need to understand as to why it cannot be. There's an earlier medrash in which I think the principle is expanded upon. When the Korach initially comes and challenges Moshe, he says to them, wait until tomorrow morning, and tomorrow everything will be sorted out. Medrash discusses why he says, wait until tomorrow morning. One of the things the Medrash says is, Omar le Moshe. Moshe said to Korach, Gevulois cholak HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam fixed certain boundaries in his world. Yecholim atem la'ariv yom v'layla? Can you mix day and night together? Moshe Omar HaKosov b'tchilo, after all the Torah says in the beginning, Vayehi erev, Vayehi veker, Vayavdel elukim bein ha'oir vein ha'chishech, Bishvil tashmishe shel olam. The Ribbono shel Olam separated between light and dark for the use of the world. Uchashem shehivdil bein ha'oir vein ha'chishech. And just as God divided between light and dark, Bishvil tashmishe shel olam, for the use of the world, Kach Yivdil Yisrael min Holmes. So too he separated the Jews from the non-Jews. Shenem, as it says, Va'avdil Eschem min Ha'amim Li Yisli. And I separated you from the nations to be for me. There's a separation, and the separation is the same as day and night. There's a boundary line which cannot be crossed over backwards and forwards. You cannot mix Jew and Gentile. It doesn't go. It's a separate, there's day and there's night, there's Jew and there's non-Jew. The Kachivdil Aaron, and likewise he separated Aaron, Shneemar, by Avdel Aaron like Bishu Bakridish Kodoshim. And he separated Aaron to sanctify him in the Holy of Holies. If you can mix up, if you can integrate the Havdolah, the separation which God brought about between light and dark, Then you can cancel out this separation between Kohanim and ordinary people, between Kohen Gadol and others. In the morning you will appreciate how this cannot be done. What does this medrash mean? We sense here that one of the things that Korach was criticizing was the sense of racialism even within the Jewish people. Kohen Gadol, ordinary people, boundaries which cannot be crossed, a non-equality in a sense. It's all very well, everybody's equal, but Kohen Gadol, and I can never become a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen, I can never become a Kohen. Is that fair? Where's the equal opportunity? Why shouldn't anybody be able to become a Kohen Gadol? Why shouldn't anybody be able to become a Kohen? Who are you, Moshe and Aaron, to decide who becomes and who doesn't become? Isn't it possible? This can't be God. This is how the argument then develops. In the eyes of God, all men are equal. So it can't be God who's making these distinctions. It must be you making it up yourselves. Why? To preserve it in the family. Look, who's the king? Moshe. Who's the Kohen Gadol? His brother Aaron. Isn't it obvious what's happening? Says Korach. He's not challenging the Ribbono Shel Olam. He doesn't believe that this comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So sure is he in the principle of equal opportunity, and that is a godly principle and something untouchable and unquestionable, that if that has been challenged, it's been challenged by Moshe and Aaron without the authority of God. And that's the basis of Korach's argument. He says, Moshe and Aaron, wait until tomorrow morning. Look at the sunrise. And then start talking about equal opportunity. The day wants to become the night wants to become the day. Can it be? Vayavdel Elokim bein Ohel Chosheh, the Ribbono Shel Olam set separations which cannot be crossed. Fair or unfair, it cannot be done. You need more daylight hours, you can't have them. You need more nighttime hours, you can't have them either. The Ribbono Shel Olam fixes exactly when the day starts and when the night starts, and that cannot be changed. In the same way between Jew and Gentile. Is that fair? Why can't a Jew become a Gentile if he pleases? He can't. So it's a boundary which cannot be crossed. The concept of a Gentile becoming a Jew is another exceptional concept which is a different thing altogether, but that in itself is a supernatural event. In the natural course of events, a non-Jew doesn't become a Jew and can't become a Jew. And likewise, the Ribbono Shel Olam was mavdil, he separated Aaron. Vayavdil Aaron lahakdishoy. He separated Aaron as a natural fact. This isn't just a matter of opportunity. This is a natural boundary which the Ribbono Shel Olam created, which cannot be traversed by anybody else. Let's try and understand this medrash just a little bit more deeply in order to understand the Machlokes Korach a little bit more deeply. What does it mean? The medrash adds some funny words, a funny phrase, twice. Vayavdel Elokim bein ha'or uvein ha'choshech, and God separated between the day and between the light and the dark. And the Medrash adds, Bishvil tashmisho shel olam, for the usage of the world. What that means is that the world would have no benefit from either dark or light if the two were integrated. If light and dark were integrated and there was an eternal twilight, there would be no benefit from dark and there would be no benefit from light. In order to benefit from light, you need dark. In order to benefit from dark, you need light. So for Tashmisho Shel Olam, to make a concept effective, the converse of the concept must exist as well. You can't have a concept that has no converse. You can't have a positive that has no negative, because then it becomes totally neutral, it becomes totally ineffective. Bishvil tashmisho shel olam, in order for something to be effective, it needs to have contrast. In order for there to be light, there needs to be dark. In order for there to be night, there needs to be day. In order for there to be Yisrael, there needs to be the goy. In order for there to be the goy, there needs to be the Yisrael. There needs to be contrast. We can't all just be the same. And that's bishvil tashmisho shel olam. That's for the usage of the world. Now let's take it a step further. So what in fact did Korach want, or what in fact is Moshe arguing with him here? Moshe says, you want to be a Kohen. That's very nice. When Aaron didn't bring a sacrifice at the Chanukah Mishkan, Chol Shadato, he became weak, he became terribly depressed by the fact that he was not included in the bringing of those sacrifices. I understand that you too want to be in the center of Avodas Hashem, that you too want to be involved with the same intensity as Aaron and Akarim. Understand that feeling. It's a wonderful feeling. There's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong is that you don't appreciate the Havdolah, you don't appreciate this boundary. What's important about the boundary? What's important is that the existence of dark is as important to light as light itself. Because just as light cannot exist without darkness, or just as light cannot exist without light, so light cannot exist if there's no darkness. The importance of night is just, the importance of night today is as important as day itself. Because day could not exist if there was no night. Likewise, the importance to the Jewish people of the non-Jew is as important as the Jew himself. For if there were no non-Jews, there would be no Jews. The concept of a Jewish nation is a nation picked out and elevated to certain responsibilities. But if everybody shares those responsibilities, then there is no choice. And if there's no chosen people, there's no Jewish people. The concept of a Kohen is Vayavdel Aaron. He separated Aaron from the others. We need the Havdolah. And if there are no Zorim, if there are no ordinary people, there is no meaning in the Kohuna. The Kohuna only has its validity in the Havdolah, in the separation, for which you need the converse. And therefore God is saying to Korach, don't you realize that by not being a Kohen Gadol, you're serving as Kohen Gadol, that's as important to the Kohuna Gadola, is your not being a Kohen Gadol. Because only that way does our intention become meaningful. And therefore he's saying to Korach, if you were really sincere in your desire for Avodas Hashem, you would realize that your not being a Kohen, or your not being a Kohen Gadol, is as important as Aaron being a Kohen Gadol. Darkness is not being light is as important as light being light. The non-Jew not being Jewish is as important as the Jew being Jewish. Because without both of those, there cannot be Havdolah, there cannot be separation. And separation is intrinsic to the value, the Medrash says, of light and dark, of day and night, of Jew and Gentile, of Aaron and the rest of the nation. There must be Havdolah, there must be a barrier, there must be separation. And for that separation to exist, you need people on both sides of the boundary holding the boundary up. If you take the people away from one side, whichever side it is, the boundary collapses and so does the Kohuna Gadol. And so Korach, don't you realize that by not being a Kohen Gadol, you are serving God just as much as Aaron is serving God by being a Kohen Gadol. There is equal opportunity. But it's not equal opportunity for status. It's equal responsibility for Avodas Hashem. For you have exactly the same opportunity to serve God as Aaron does. Aaron serves God by being a Kohen Gadol, you serve God by not being a Kohen Gadol. And the value of your service is equal. Status, that's not equal. And so what Moshe is really challenging is the integrity of Korach's claim. Not that you want to serve God, not that you want to be more intense in your involvement, not that you crave to be as involved as Aaron HaKohen is. That's not what I'm challenging, says Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm challenging your integrity. Do you understand, or don't you understand, that by not being a Kohen Gadol, you're doing as much for God as Aaron is by being a Kohen Gadol? And that if we make everybody a Kohen Gadol, as the next Medrash says, we have one Kohen Gadol, one Beis HaMikdash, one Mizbeach, one service of God, one Torah, one Mishpat. It has to be unique. And the moment we deviate from that uniqueness, we deviate from the essence of Yiddishkeit altogether. You, by not being the Kohen Gadol, make it possible for Aaron to be the Kohen Gadol. We need those who are not Kohanim Gadolim as well. We need those who are not Kohanim. We need those who are not Levim. They need ordinary Yisraelim too, for if there were no ordinary Yisraelim, there would be no Levim. If there were no Levim, there would be no Kohanim. It's a center of a circle that's like the ripples of a pond when you drop a stone into it. You need the ripples at the center, you need the stone at the center, but you need the pond. Otherwise there are no ripples. You need Klal Yisrael, who are not to be Kohanim, who are not to be Kohanim Gedolim. Otherwise there can be no effectiveness in the Kohuna Gedolah. And this leads us to a very great chiddush, that there was nothing basically wrong with Korach's claim. It deteriorated. As the story goes on, we see the deterioration of Korach. That initially the only thing that was wrong was a touch of insincerity. He wasn't jealous of Aaron because Aaron sat at the top table and he sat somewhere else. That's not what a man like Korach was jealous of. He wasn't jealous because Aaron used to be called up Rishon and he used to be called up Sheni or Shlishi. That's not what he was jealous of. He was jealous that Aaron had the opportunity for Avodas Hashem, which no other human being had. And he wanted a bit of that as well. He wanted a slice of that cake too. Says Moshe, if that's what you want, don't you realize you've got it by not being the Kohen Gadol? And Korach doesn't see that. Therefore, the only claim against Korach is that it was Shaloi Lishmo, that his intent lacked integrity, that it wasn't really for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Deep, deep down, it was more a question of I want the Avodas Hashem, rather than I want the Avodas Hashem to be done. Even in spiritual areas, there's a difference between Lishmo and Lo Lishmo. On our ordinary levels, we would interpret it as I want to be Kohen Gadol so that I can sit up front. That Korach wasn't involved in such petty nonsense. He was involved in, if there's work to be done, I want to be the one to do it. That says Moshe Rabbeinu, on your level, that's Shaloi Lishmo. What do you care who's doing it? The main thing is the work is being done and you are helping it being done by not being the Kohen Gadol. And if you really were sincere, you would enjoy not being the Kohen Gadol as much as Aaron enjoys being the Kohen Gadol. That's the difference between Aaron's feeling at the time of the bringing of the Korbanos. He wasn't feeling jealous of barriers that couldn't be crossed. He was jealous of an action. They brought a Korban which he hasn't brought. He's qualified to bring it. So why shouldn't he bring it? Isn't jealousy of something which is, you know, the grass is green on the other side, depends very much on the border being uncrossable. If the border is crossable, somehow the grass doesn't look so green anymore. It's only when you know it's unattainable that it looks attractive. The moment it becomes attainable, it ceases to be quite so attractive. Aaron wasn't jealous of something unattainable. Korach was jealous of something unattainable without the realization that he was serving the very thing for which he was jealous by not serving it. It's a difficult concept, and probably you need to think about it before you fully grasp it. By not serving that function, he was serving that function as much as he would have been by serving the function. That's what we're saying. And only Elishma, only if one's intent is 100% sincere, could one appreciate such a subtle concept that by not being the Kohen Gadol, I'm serving the Kohuna Gadolah as much as Aaron, who is the Kohen Gadol. And that's why in Pirkei Avos, in the fifth Perek, it gives an example, Ezehu Machlekes She'eino L'Shem Shamayim. What is an example of a Machlekes that wasn't Lishma? Machlekes Korach V'Adosa. That was this Machlekes here. That was all that was wrong with it. It was Shaloi Lishma. The Machlekes itself is fine. If it would have been Lishma, we see in Pirkei Avos, it wouldn't have been criticized. It doesn't say it's a bad Machlekes, it shouldn't have taken place. The Machlekes itself, the desire to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's fine. All that was wrong with it was that it was Shaloi Lishma. That we note in Korach that it was Shaloi Lishma. That little tiny Shaloi Lishma, that little tiny bit of insincerity, and very tiny it was, because on our levels we would consider that absolutely Lishmo. Can you imagine a person who wants to be Kohen Gadol not for the status at all, that is prepared to forgo absolutely? He wants to be Kohen Gadol because of the responsibility, because of the Avodas Hashem, the opportunity to get closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Kedusha involved in it, despite all the self-sacrifice which would be involved, still that's what he wants. imagine what we would say about such a person. How wonderful, how lishmo. The only thing was, he couldn't see that by not being the Kohen Gadol, he was serving that function just as much as by being the Kohen Gadol. And that's called Shalei Lishmo. So one would think, if it's such a tiny little impropriety in Korach's attitude, why does it become such a timus here? What goes on? How does it evolve into something so major which nearly destroys the nation? That little crack of Shalei Lishmo lets in all sorts of other things. Rashi brings in the beginning, what was it? Umar ro Korach lachlechi Moshe. What brought Korach to disagree with Moshe? Niskane al Mitziusoi Shalei Litzofon ben Uziah. Sheminoh Moshe Nosi al Bnei Kahat al Piyadim. Korach became jealous of the appointment of Elitzofon ben Uziel, whom he felt was junior to himself, and he felt that the next office that went available he, Korach, should have got, and when Elitzofon got it instead, he felt jealous. That's the point at which an emotion either retains its kedusha, its sanctity, or it becomes totally destructive. He's jealous of the appointment. Fine. Aaron was jealous of the Nesiim and he wasn't criticized for that. Jealousy, on the one hand, is a wonderful motivator, and on the other hand, it's a destroyer of relationships and a destroyer of oneself. It destroys more people than anything else, and yet it can also be a tremendous motivator. It depends if it's lishmo or shalei lishmo. What am I really jealous of? Korach was jealous, and that jealousy developed not into an attitude of I want the work to be done, but I want to do the work. And that departure from the lishmo led to destruction. That crack in his character became bigger and bigger and bigger. The concept of lishmo and shalei lishmo, doing a thing for its own sake, for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam, is a concept which we have to deal with at length some other time, but something of primary importance to everything that we do. We discussed in the ladies' shiur this afternoon, this morning, how incongruous idolatry looks when we read through the pages of Tanakh in a society that was, at that time, a frum society, a society of supposed B'nai Torah, and yet idolatry is rife. It looks so odd, it looks so incongruous. And we discussed how it's no more incongruous than many of the things that we do. And we learned the passage of the Sefer HaYosher of Rabbeinu Tam, and the Chayim HaVovus of Rabbeinu Bechaya, where they say that some of our practices are far worse than idolatry. When a person, take it the other way around, you very often hear people saying, do you know so and so, at home he eats kosher, when he goes out he doesn't. Isn't it terrible? Well, certainly it is terrible, but not as terrible as it sounds. He's a hypocrite. It's not hypocrisy at all. The other way around is far more hypocritical. Person who eats kosher when he's out and not in his own home. The person whose standards of Yiddishkeit are higher in public than they are in private. It says the Sefer HaYosher of Rabbeinu Tam, that indicates that he has two gods. When he's at home, he stands before God and his level of Yiddishkeit drops. Instead of taking half an hour to daven shacharis, he davens shacharis for 7 minutes. Why should that be? You're standing before the same Ribbono Shel Olam. What's the difference? Mole chol ha'aretz kavodah. God is in shul, God is at home, the Ribbono Shel Olam is everywhere. And that's why we can't tolerate the presence of a deity. Here he is. You don't have such a thing. The Ribbono Shel Olam is everywhere. So I have to daven at home, on an onus. Good. Daven at home. 7 minutes, the davening is over. I come to shul, a nice, slow, long davening. The Shmoneh Esra takes me longer than the whole of Shacharis takes me at home. What's changed? What do I have in shul that I don't have at home? So we say for Yoshua, other people. That's what I don't have. What's that for? I've got a shul that I don't have at home. So who am I serving? God or people? If I was serving God, it would make no difference where I was davening. Davening would take the same length of time, excepting for the Chazaras Hashatz. If I'm serving people, sure, it's going to be longer when I'm in shul. Sure, I'll shock a little bit more when I'm in shul. I'll daven aloud a little bit more when I'm in shul. Our standards of Yiddishkeit are greater when we're outside than we're at home. That's worse than the other way around. Lishmor entails a certain purification, a certain understanding that the things we're doing for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And we will do them as correctly and as meticulously where the people are looking or people aren't looking. What we want is that the Avoda should be done correctly, that the Ribbono Shel Olam should have that which he expects of us. The emphasis is not on me, the emphasis is on what I'm doing. The emphasis is on the Avoda. That's what has to be perfect. And where there isn't a Lishmo, all sorts of other things creep in and things deteriorate. Where the Yiddishkeit is not Lishmo, then there is no limit to how illusionary it can become, how false it can become, and how destructive it can become. Of course, we have the principle of Lo'ilam Yasek Odom Betzeru Mitzvah Shelo Lishmo Shemitzvah Shelo Lishmo Bolishmo. We do have the principle that even if you're not doing it Lishmo, it's still better do it than don't. And it's not an excuse. One can't say, look, I'm not on the level of Lishmo yet. I can't do things for their own sake yet. I still do daven better when people are watching them when they're not. So you know what? I'll stop davening altogether. That one can't do. Because Mitzvah Shelo Lishmo Bolishmo. One can develop oneself and elevate oneself from a lo-lishmo, from doing a thing not for its own sake, into ultimately doing it for its own sake. Whereas if you stop doing it altogether, you'll never get there. But one needs to know that that's the direction in which we have to work. And that this entire destructive episode in the life and in the history of Am Yisrael was caused not by an over-ambitious man, and not by a man full of machlekes and a faribunik, and that's not what it was. It was caused by a man who desired to serve God with greater intensity. But synthesized into that desire was a little touch of Shelo Lishmo, a little touch of supposed insincerity. More a desire that he wanted to do it than that he wanted the job done. And it was that which led him to jealousy, and was that which led him to an incorrect and inaccurate vision of what he beheld, and it is that which almost led Klal Yisrael to the brink of destruction.